Hello and welcome to The Big Fight, where this week we're going to talk about Pakistan. Now, yeah, any subject, the minute you start talking about Pakistan on any TV station these days, it does become a big fight. And it's normally people yelling, you know, across the border in one form or the other. It's one of the retirement plans of the Pakistani army right now to have all their retired officers coming on Indian TV channels and, you know, being paid to be shouted at a little bit. But on this particular program, for the next hour or so, we're going to try and have a slightly more civilized discussion about what should actually be done with Pakistan now that there is a new leader there. Imran Khan's taken over. Is it an opening for India to use? Is there any point in even thinking about openings? Because how many times has India made an overture to Pakistan, extended a hand of friendship and only been betrayed? I mean, we just were talking all of last week about the Lahore bus journey and what happened after that. We've also been remembering what Atal Bihari Vajpayee used to say about the fact that you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your neighbours. Over the course of the next one hour, you're going to be hearing on this show, and it's a privilege to have assembled on this program some of the top thinkers that we have on the subject of Pakistan and India-Pakistan relationship. Starting with Sham Saran, former foreign secretary, dealt with the subject very, very closely. It's a pleasure and a privilege to have Dr. Farooq Abdullah joining us, former chief minister, Jammu and Kashmir. Amarjit Singh Dhullar, former chief of RAW, and has therefore been really very instrumental in handling relations with Pakistan. Seshadri Chari is joining us, one of our top strategic affairs experts, member of the Bharatiya Janata Party. Deshaj Nigam is with us, member of the RSS, is going to give us his perspective. Manishankar Iyer, former union minister, widely has a reputation for being one of the big doves on Pakistan, or what some channels call the lobby. So, you know, you are a lobby, Mani, in case you didn't know that. And Ajay Sahni, it's a pleasure to have you with us, Executive Director, Institute for Conflict Management. So as I said, some of the top experts we have on the subject of India-Pakistan relations. Let me start by throwing it to you, Dr. Abdullah. Is the election of Imran Khan to be viewed by us as an opportunity? Is this an opening that should be taken advantage of in some way so that we can try and move forward with dialogues? Or should we just concentrate on getting our internal houses in order and not think too much about Pakistan right now?
Well, I think time has come when the new leader is in Pakistan, and we should use all our, you know, people who can create a better situation between these two nations. I don't think it'll be a straight prime minister to prime minister's meeting. I think ground should be prepared by others for such a meeting so that when they meet, there is something positive which will create better relationship between these two nations. It is need of the hour. For a long time, we have been on the fighting fronts. I think today we have an opportunity. Imran Khan Saab has the goodwill of the army, goodwill of the people, and I think a good beginning should be made.
General Deepak Kapoor, former chief of army staff, let me get you in next and see whether you agree with that viewpoint or whether you think there is no point in getting into a dialogue right now.
I would like to agree with Farooq Abdullah, and I would say it is an opening which should be exploited, and if to put it correctly, the Prime Minister, our Prime Minister, has already said that as long as Pakistan is prepared to talk about fundamentalism, terrorism, and also perhaps Kashmir, I'm sure there is always a scope for opening it up and carrying ahead this dialogue. If it is able to achieve something, it will be good for both the countries.
Seshadri Chari, there lies the rub, right? Because when you start conversations with Pakistan, Pakistan seems to only want to talk about Kashmir. If Pakistan says, yes, we will, can they really give you an assurance on being able to do something on terror? Because every time there's a, you think that things are moving with Pakistan, the problem is Lahore will be followed by, Lahore will be immediately followed by Kargil. Then you'll have, Agra, which will have its own betrayal. Then again, you'll get into dialogues, will be followed by Mumbai.
Vikram, a new prime minister in Pakistan does not mean a change in policy of the Pakistani army. It's another thing that none of the prime ministers so far could ever complete his or her term. So the single most achievement of this present Prime Minister Imran Khan would be if he is able to complete his term in office, that's all. And especially Imran Khan, for example, he is on a very weak wicket, he is not a strong batsman, and he actually heads a coalition government, a minority government. So it is very difficult to expect that he will set a new rules and he will be able to really go beyond the dictates and command of the army.
Dr. Abdullah, would you agree with that? Essentially, it doesn't really change anything. It's still the Pakistani army that's going to call the shots. Why hope that things will be any different this time around?
I think situation in the world has changed. Pakistan has been put on mat by the world on terrorism. They want to get out of that thing. And also one thing I would like to tell the panelists, that what about Bajpayee? He was heading a government of 23 parties. He wasn't master of himself. Yet he had the courage to take the trip to Lahore. He took that step. We had Kargil. But even then, he called Musharraf. He had the guts. I'm sure Imran has been pro-India in the past, and we should not undermine that.
Now, when it comes to peace to Jammu and Kashmir, as we have seen this week itself, we saw that violence that was taking place on Eid. We saw how you yourself were heckled because you said Bharat Mata Ki Jai in Delhi. There used to be a time when you needed Pakistan, where if Pakistan said, we will ratchet down the pressure, there will be peace in Jammu and Kashmir. Today, does Pakistan have the ability to restore peace inside the valley, or is it now an internal problem for us to deal with?
It has always been an internal problem that we have to deal with. But let us not forget, if peace comes between these two nations, the Western interests will die who are keeping this tragedy alive. To kill that Western interest, you need peace between these two nations.
Mr. Dulat, can I start getting the panel here? Can I get you in on this? Is it an opening? Should we talk to Pakistan? And if so, why?
We should always talk to Pakistan. And I think there is an opening when there is a change. And I don't think we should belittle Imran. After all, he's been Kaptan Saab. He brought Pakistan the World Cup. And he has a great following in Pakistan. The youth is totally supportive of him. And he has said...
But people say he's an army candidate. He's propped up by the army.
Okay. So much the better if he's an army candidate, because our problem has always been with the military, you know, that the military runs the show, this, that, and the other. My take is that Imran is very much his own man, for one. He's not a pushover. Secondly, if he has a good relationship with the army, it will be to his advantage. You know, the kind of democracy that you have in Pakistan is quite different from our democracy. You know, ours is a genuine democracy. Pakistan, in that sense, we must acknowledge, has a limited democracy to the extent that there are some red lines where the army has the final word. So if you have a prime minister who has a good relationship with the army, it will be that much easier to deal with him.
So you're saying it could be easier for Imran Khan to have peace with India than it would have been for Nawaz Sharif or somebody whom the army is not that
keen on? Absolutely, absolutely.
That same logic, Deshnath Nigam, potentially extends to Narendra Modi also. If there is one prime minister who may be able to push through. I mean, it is only somebody like a Narendra Modi who will say, I'm going to just fly into Pakistan, go and meet Nawaz Sharif, go and visit his house. Very few prime ministers would have the ability to be able to carry out a step like that without his intentions being called into question. So would you take that forward by saying that if Imran Khan is therefore a person who could do something, Narendra Modi is similar?
My suggestion is wait and watch. However, a person joins politics in Pakistan on his own free will, to say lightly, but leaves on the will of the army. The mode of leaving is sometimes also decided by the army, sometimes permanently as well. And if you look at the history also, since 1947, Pakistan has not forgotten its enmity with India. That's the crux of the problem. Bhutto says he'll fight war for 1,000 years, and even if he had to eat the grass.
Now, that nation is willing to hurt itself in order to hurt India. That's the problem out there. We gave them most favored nation status in 1996. They have not been able to reciprocate. So the problem lies at their end, not with us. We have tried time and again with them, but with a zero result.
Manishankar Iyer, if as Deshan Nigam saying that it's an attitude of enmity that Pakistan has, which is not going to go away. Therefore, that's where the question comes, why waste time talking, because you're not going to get anywhere.
I was posted to Pakistan just under 40 years ago. And in the last 40 years, I think I must have gone there 40 times. And I've never heard a single Pakistani say that he wants to fight a 1,000-year war with India.
Bhutto
said it. That is the point. Bhutto said it in 1965. They got a bloody nose in 1971. They are not an unintelligent people. They recognize their limitations, and therefore the rhetoric of 1965 is simply not to be heard today. Now, if you want to sustain hostility with Pakistan, then the path shown by our friend from the RSS is the correct one. Think up every single hurt that the Pakistanis have inflicted on us and go on reciting it. And to take up your expression of just a few minutes ago, that Lahore was succeeded by Kargil, I would say Kargil was succeeded by Agra and by Islamabad. And then we entered into a negotiation with Pakistan on the back channel. It lasted for 3 years.
Let's not forget, that was followed by Mumbai.
I'm coming exactly to that. For 3 years, we spoke to Pakistan on no subject other than Kashmir. And it was Musharraf, not Manmohan Singh, who summed up the results of the talk as a four-point formula. When the dialogue with Musharraf broke down, owing to Musharraf having got into trouble with his own judiciary, there was no dialogue taking place when Mumbai took place.
You're saying there was a Mumbai happened because there was a vacuum, not because you were in the process of the dialogue.
I think any vacuum, as we've had now, as a result of the surgical strike on Pakistan, has there been any reduction in terrorism?
I mean, there have been attacks on army camps as Pathankot.
Yeah, that went before. After Uri and Pathankot, we decided on a surgical strike. The surgical strike should have frightened the Pakistanis so much as to stop terrorism, it escalated.
There hasn't been a major terrorist attack, so therefore Pakistan is scared.
Finish my sentence. We have had an escalation of terrorist incidents. We've had an escalation of cross-border firing. We've had an escalation of cross-border infiltration. By not talking to them, we've solved nothing. And if you want to sustain hostility with Pakistan, because Pakistan is such an easy metaphor for Muslims in India, the best thing to do is to not talk to them. But if you want to achieve the kind of goal that Dr. Farooq Abdullah was talking about, a peaceful relationship, or at least a via media, a modus vivendi, the only way you can do it is to talk to them. And there is a clear proof that a solid, uninterrupted process of 3 years on the most controversial issue, Kashmir, can actually lead to a constructive result. Every improvement of a major kind in India-Pakistan relations has been when the army has been in power, not when the civil authority has been in power.
Okay. You will acknowledge that was a long sentence.
Pardon?
You will acknowledge that was a long sentence.
Without any full stops.
Yeah, thank
commas.
You very much.
Yes, it was a very long sentence.
It's a great relief to be able to talk on NDTV.
I normally do allow people
I
to talk.
I think that's the only challenge.
I do allow people to talk. It depends on whether and when you need to, rein in the sentence a little bit. All right, Ajay Sani, you haven't had a chance to speak yet.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say we need to sort of go away from these ideologically polarized assessments. Our assessments need to be in some measure, totally, but at least tenuously linked to reality. So the first thing I'd like to say is that Bhutto wasn't the last man to say that the enmity with India is perpetual. Musharraf in, I think, 1999-2000 was asked whether if the Kashmir issue is resolved, would enmity with India end, and he was very, very emphatic in saying never. So there is a very strong anti-India sentiment. Now, a lot of people have reduced, you know, okay, you say, should there be talks with Pakistan or not? I don't think that's how we should be framing the question at all. There are talks with Pakistan. Our NSAs have met on several occasions over the past few years. The DGMOs talk constantly. Back channels are open. All that is ongoing. What we're talking about is the resumption of a comprehensive dialogue. And that's all. Or a very high-profile meeting between prime ministers. Now, there I would go right back to Mr. Farooq Abdullah and what he said, that a lot of homework needs to be done, a lot of build-up needs to be done before the prime ministers meet, because otherwise it's a damn squib. Number three, and I think most importantly, we are speaking of this in a very narrow context, the ascension of Imran Khan to the position of prime minister. And a lot of this has been Imran Khan is pro-India, he's a nice man, he's a good man, he has good intent. I'd like to say that this should not be personality-oriented. Leaders through history have tried to escape the logic of their ascension to power, and they have always failed. The greatest example was the whiskey-drinking and pork-eating Jinnah, who exploited communalism,
right,
incited communal violence, and then went and made that ludicrous speech in the Constituent Assembly, saying that Pakistan will be a country where religion will be irrelevant and caste will be irrelevant and all people will live with equal citizenship.
It was a ludicrous speech, in the context of the time.
It was ludicrous.
We may all agree with what he was saying.
It is a ludicrous speech in the context of what he had done.
Yes,
and
that's what I meant.
Brought him to
that's
power.
What I meant. That's
now,
what I meant.
In ten, that sense, we have to go back. We have to go back to Imran Khan's ascent to power. And what is the dynamic of that ascent? He has exploited extremism. He has partnered with religiously extremist parties, with terrorist groupings. And he has used vicious anti-India rhetoric throughout his campaign. Now, to assume that he can suddenly, after being sworn in, become a messiah of secularism and friendship with India is, I think, a little problematic.
But sometimes that would be the argument. Okay, so I think that's an interesting point to take. Then you want to just respond to Sunny Mani had to say that I want to go back to.
What Mani was saying is, look at the latest example. Prime Minister said subject to terrorism and other things. That was sidestepped by Imran Khan. He never went on to those questions, which is the crucial thing, which is the central issue between our relationship. So he very clearly sidestepped it. He said, let's trade. The emphasis was more on trade, because the balance is more in India's favor. I mean, that's what he's looking at, the economic aspect of it, but he's not addressing the central issue of the problem.
Okay, so not addressing the central issue of terrorism. Let me just come back to all of you on that. Dr. Abdullah, I think what Ajay was sort of alluding to is, given the history of where Imran Khan is coming and given the history of all that's been happening in Pakistan, maybe there is no real willingness to step away from the question of let's end the enmity with India and let's end our efforts to try and bleed India by death by 1,000 cuts or whatever they've been trying to do. There's no real long-term intention to ratchet down on terrorism. And if that doesn't happen, what's the point of talking? What's the point of actually being able to have a high-level comprehensive dialogue or strategic dialogue or having a grand meeting between Narendra Modi and Imran Khan?
Terrorism, no doubt, is a threat not only to us, to them, to the whole world. But we should never ignore the fact that he is Pakistan's prime minister. He will talk in the interest of Pakistan. And therefore, it is in the interest of Pakistan also to find a better relationship with India. We are their immediate neighbor. And if he is able to do so, it will make a lot of difference, not only to the peace in this subcontinent, but to the world peace. So if we just remember 50 years or 70 years what Jinnah Sahib said and what Bhutto said, then we will never get anywhere. One day we have to end this circle of violence that is going on. And that can only be done if you catch the bull by the horn, not otherwise. I don't say there'll be an immediate heaven will be opened. No. But try we must. We must not stop trying. We must continue. the dialogue, not at the Prime Minister, I already made it clear, but at all levels we should try to find out what is the best way forward. For God's sake, let us not be negative. If we start with negative, we'll never be positive. Start with positive, we might get somewhere.
All right. Don't be negative. Even if Pakistan gives us a lot to be negative about, don't be negative. You have to somehow try and find a way through it. Is essentially the signal that's coming through from you. General Deepak Kapoor, on the question of terrorism, on the question of hostility from the Pakistani army, efforts to put infiltration up, Manish Shankar Iyer was saying a short while back that actually that goes up in a situation of vacuum, goes down when you're in a process of dialogue. Would you agree with that assessment?
Firstly, Vikram, I'd like to say something about the comprehensive dialogue that we're talking about. It is important to understand that while agreeing with Mr. Farooq Abdullah, I'd like to say that the methodology of the dialogue needs to be changed from the past. While all the panelists recognize that the army wields a tremendous amount of influence in terms of Pakistan's security and foreign policy towards India. So yeah. Therefore, my submission is that we should look at involving the Pakistan army along with the political side in a direct dialogue. This is something which I've talked about in the past. Since we are only getting involved in talking at the political level, since the army holds the strength from the background, it becomes difficult to carry on with the dialogue, and in some way or the other, whatever is decided at the political level gets scuttled. So while you have them sitting at the negotiating table, it may be well worth looking at a solution where they would themselves be committed to a dialogue.
All right, that's an interesting point. Cheshadi Chari, let me just get you in on that. It's an interesting thought there from General Kapoor, says that seeing as the Pakistani army is in any case calling the shots, get them into a particular dialogue. And Cheshadri Chari, just wanted to throw one more thought out for you to comment on in addition to that. The concept of China increasingly having a role in Pakistan. Pakistan, for all practical purposes, given how that it's an increasing economic slide, it's for all practical purposes becoming a vassal state of China. And for India, maybe that is a factor that we may also need to start thinking and considering. Do you really want a full-fledged Chinese puppet of 200 million people on your borders? And that is something to keep in mind. Sometimes we, in India, we say Pakistan deserves to collapse, and it should collapse because of all that it's done to us. But then that's the thought which sometimes may hold you back a little bit. You don't really want to fail state or a Chinese puppet.
See, the situation in Pakistan is such that the army has always been at the helm of affairs right from 1947. So if you see, the army has never allowed any prime minister to continue and make his term full. So what happened was, Ayub Khan took power and he decided the strategy and security and the foreign policy of Pakistan. General Zia did the same thing.
General Kapoor says, talk straight to the army. Talk to the army. Bypass all of this.
Let me come to the point. Later on, the army itself felt that they are getting a raw deal from the Western world, which was asking for a democratic setup within Islamabad. Therefore, when Musharraf became the president, Musharraf categorically said that I will not sit in the chair of the political chair with the army fatigue. So he removed that, and then he sat there as a civilian, but he was behaving exactly as the army wanted him to behave, and he was an army man to the boot. Now what has happened is, the army decides the political course, the army decides the religious course, the army decides the security and strategy of that country. And the Pakistani army is the single point window for Chinese involvement in Pakistan. Therefore, if India has to deal with the army over the head of the elected Prime Minister, it's a different call that New Delhi will have to take. I don't think it is possible for New Delhi to talk to the army when there is a prime minister in Islamabad. So we will have to talk to the prime minister of that country, and the prime minister of that country cannot say anything that the army does not want him to say.
Okay.
Therefore, it's a very difficult situation. So there is no point in saying that we should talk to the army. We cannot be talking to the army and the prime minister at the same time. We cannot talk to the prime minister because he will not say what he wants to say. He will have to say what the army has to say. And if you have to talk to the army, then why have the sham of talking to the prime minister at all?
All right.
At the most, DGMO level talks are going on.
Okay. That is enough. Mr. Dullard, talk to the army. How do you talk to the army over the head of the prime minister? Does it make any sense to talk to the prime minister when the army is there? And by the way, the China factor and all of this, is any point to talk to Pakistan or all the strings being pulled by China?
You can talk to whoever you like, Vikram, in Pakistan. There's no problem. If we decided that we want to talk only to the army or to the army chief, I'm sure there would be ways of talking to the army. But let me go back to what Dr. Farooq was saying. And it's interesting, both times he stressed on the point that it's not necessary immediately for the prime ministers to meet. So obviously he knows something which he is not sharing. And what he's hinting at actually is that, possibly a back channel could start. Now, in the context of what the general just said, maybe the general is hinting that for the back channel, we should have a general talking to whoever there is from the Pakistani side. Now, that is something we could consider, but I don't see it happening. On the question of terrorism, let me say this, that, I agree entirely with Mr. Manishankar Iyer that there have been periods where Pakistan has cooperated with us. We could go back to as far as 2002, 2003, when the ceasefire took place. And Pakistan did hold back. In fact, after 9/11, which was a watershed and helped us greatly indirectly, Pakistan did hold back. And the period again, 2005 to 2008, was a very peaceful period. Where I disagree with Mr. Manishankar Iyer is that I think we missed out on that window of opportunity, particularly 2006, 2007. I think Musharraf had been waiting all the time for Dr. Manmohan Singh to visit Pakistan, but it never happened. So I think we should not always put the blame on Pakistan. On terrorism, I think Imran has already said that we have to deal with terrorism, and he has even got to the extent of suggesting that why don't we deal with it together? I don't think there's anything wrong with that suggestion.
All right. Deshatan, just wanted to ask you, one of the factors that I was alluding to regarding China, is that, do you think, increasingly going to become a factor? If India is increasingly getting more and more concerned about China and Chinese influence in our neighborhood, then is that a reason to start saying, all right, we'd better figure something? We don't actually want Pakistan to go bust and become a Chinese ally.
It is already.
I mean, it is a Chinese ally. It is. A Chinese puppet.
All weather friend. That's what they call it. And the focus, India's foreign policy focus shifted from being Pakistan-centric to China-centric during Atal Bihari Vajpayee's time. Yeah. And then the focus shifted there. And it has been rightly pointed out by others that foreign policy of Pakistan is not decided in their foreign office. It is decided in the army headquarters. If that had not been so, then we would have had the JUD chief, who has been declared a UN terrorist, would have been in India by now. And the fact remains that China's angle cannot be ignored at all. And that aspect has to be kept in mind, because India cannot be Pakistan-centric all the time. And terrorism has...
So that's why I'm asking, if India is not Pakistan-centric, does that influence... Ajay, let me get you in on that point. If India is not thinking in a Pakistan-centric manner, if you're thinking in a more China-centric manner, which is logically the right thing for a country of India's size to do, how then does that affect any equation with Pakistan?
One little thing before Mr. Sahani begins. If you look at the cabinet composition of Imran Khan, half of the cabinet is Pervez Musharraf's men.
You deplore that?
I deplore that.
Oh, I see.
Actually,
yes, I
Musharraf...
They are army people, by army. That's the point.
Since Nigam Saab has mentioned Musharraf, let me just say this. that no Pakistani leader in the last 30 years has been more reasonable towards India than General Musharraf was. Exactly.
Although he was the man behind Kargil.
Yes. He was, and he regretted
that
it.
That is the point.
That's the point.
You do that it, and you point. Regret it.
That Vajpayee had the brilliance, and I hope you'll acknowledge this, Vajpayee had the brilliance to talk to the butcher of Kargil. Instead of shying away from him, he said, all right, I'll take you on. And it was with Musharraf that we made the most progress. The fact of the matter is, there's no difficulty in international diplomacy. It's a common practice that a delegation comprises both the civilians and the military. Or, if you like, the retired military.
So I would say, so I'm just trying to see where all our wise people here, and I'm trying to draw hints from this, because these are all the wise people you will have on this subject, hinting towards back-channel diplomacy with maybe elements of both the army and the government. Is that what we're hearing?
I know of a lot of generals who have been going up and down for several years now. It's not going to be something new. You see, the only problem I have with all what we're talking about is it seems to suggest that we have this abundance of choices that we need to make, and all of them are free choices. Should Pakistan be allowed to be a failed state or become a vassal of China?
It
should
well
we talk to the army or not?
Case, irrespective of what we do, it might be ending.
This is not something that you play such a decisive role in. If the Pakistan army, and I beg to disagree slightly with Mr. Dulat over here, it is the Pakistan army's decision as to whether it wishes to openly come out. It's not as if we're not talking to the Pakistan army. But does it want to come out in this visible political platform, in this avatar as being directly engaged with India? Or would it rather like to hedge its bets by putting a vulnerable prime minister or a vulnerable civilian government into a dialogue, which it can scuttle whenever it pleases? Having said that, I would agree over here that Musharraf was very, very good with the 2003 agreement is what really allowed the building of the fence, number one, and a tremendous recovery of space within Jammu and Kashmir by the civil administration and the forces. So, yes, we need to look at all these things, look at them objectively, without these grand gestures and postures and pretensions, very importantly, pretensions, as if we are making all the major decisions over here. Having said that, also I'd like to underline one more thing. Terrorism in Jammu and Kashmir did not start with the surgical strikes. It has a slightly longer history.
Well, actually,
let me just add here. Musharraf used to stab you smilingly. That's what he did. Kargil happened, he stabbed you. How can you allow your more than 550 men and soldiers being killed and then keep on smiling with Pervez Musharraf? That's not the attitude India has now. I'm sure of that.
That's the same question which will come with terrorism, that how can you talk to Pakistan when they are funding terrorism?
When they are involved with terrorism, you have to talk to them in order to see whether terrorism can be brought down. If you don't talk to them, you're handing over the India-Pakistan relationship to terrorists. The intelligent thing for both of us to recognize, I want to give an example. I'll try and be as brief as I can. In 1992, the civil government of Mr. P.V. Narasimha Rao, through the aegis of Sri N.N. Vora, who was then Defense Secretary and has just left the post of Governor J.N.K., came to an agreement with my friend Salim Abbas Jilani, the Defense Secretary of Pakistan, on Siachen. They came to an agreement. The time was announced, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The press were told to turn up at Hyderabad House, and the signature would take place between the two defense secretaries. The Indian Army at that point said that they did not agree with the agreement, and so the agreement was never signed. So there is bound to be a major influence of the Army of Intelligence Services on any government, their government or ours, in national
you
security.
You can't equate
question.
The sort of influence that the Pakistani army has on Pakistan
for that
the
reason,
Indian army
no,
has.
Therefore, let me, my conclusion is this. Therefore, let us accept that the Pakistan army is a major player in this regard. But in the past, we have had several good experiences with the Pakistan army.
So let me just, General Kapoor, if I can just get you in on that point, and I'll come back to Manishankar Iyer, I promise. General Kapoor, if I could just ask you, what Manishankar Iyer is saying about the Pakistani army, he said that the Indian army, it's not that the Indian army doesn't also have an influence in some form or the other. To your mind, does the Pakistani army, is the Pakistani army today showing any willingness or desire to try and bend bridges with India or no?
Firstly, Vikram, I'd like to say that the differentiation of the Taliban, the good and bad Taliban that the Pakistan army is indulging in is not a good differentiation. It uses the good Taliban to try and create a proxy war in Jammu and Kashmir, as also to gain strategic advantage in Afghanistan, whereas it like to finish a bad Taliban, which is harming the country of Pakistan itself. But you cannot really differentiate between good and bad Taliban.
All right.
And neither they are good terrorists nor they are bad terrorists. Terrorism as a concept needs to be done away with, and therefore both the countries need to combine.
All right. Seshadri Chari, one point we keep talking about. You know,
secondly, the point about Pakistan army, as long as we engage them in an overall composite dialogue. I did not say they must be engaged individually, but they can be part of the political dialogue.
That's right.
They can be part of a composite dialogue where they also participate, and therefore there's a degree of commitment which comes from them, which would, I'm sure, they would like to make sure that they carry out.
Fine. Seshadri Chari, if I could just get you in any case, given the fact that we are a few months away from a general election in 2019, okay, Imran Khan may well have been taken over. Does it, there are two theories on this. One is that it becomes something for Narendra Modi to talk about in my last year, in this term as Prime Minister. I'm sure he's hoping to have another term. I tried to make peace with Pakistan. I went and I made another gesture. That's one way of looking at it. Another way is that there's absolutely no chance that he would take that political risk right now, so close to the election. And therefore, any talk we're having, politically speaking, is going to have to wait till for 1 year from now, until either Narendra Modi comes back or there's another government.
Yeah.
You know, relations with India is a big issue as far as Pakistan is concerned.
I'm often
Nawaz Sharif went to elections, and his election promise was that I will improve relations with India, and he was voted. Incidentally, Imran Khan, in spite of being called Taliban Khan, Imran Khan also said the same thing during election run to election, that I'll improve relations with India. And I want peace and tranquility in the border. That's what he said. But that makes political sense as far as Pakistan is concerned. But it does not make political sense as far as India is concerned. The question that India is facing is internal security and also protecting the people and the properties from terrorism, which is emanating from the soil of Pakistan. Therefore, any kind of talks that we will be holding with Pakistan is not going to solve that problem at all.
No, and you're saying that politically speaking, it's very unlikely that there will be any grand openings to Pakistan made in the next 1 year. If anything, for political reasons, there may well be more grandstanding, more talk about the surgical strikes. Who knows if there's another terrorist attack, maybe another round of surgical strikes. Politically speaking, in India, that's more likely than big talks.
No, it's not the question of politics. Terror attacks cannot be linked with political fortunes of any particular political party. And I don't think there is any attempt by any government, why only this government, to make strikes. A political issue. Should not be made a political issue. So we are not looking at it from the political point of view
all right,
at all.
Right,
the surgical strike is not a political issue. The only issue with Pakistan would be, I think, instead of rushing into talks, instead of setting our agenda before we really know what is going to be their agenda, the best thing would be to wait and watch for another 6-7 months.
Yeah.
We will see if Imran Khan is able to settle down in his own work.
And as I said, that also takes us past the election.
Even while taking charge of prime ministership, he has said about human rights violations in Kashmir.
Okay, fair enough. I'm trying to wrap this show up now. Farooq Abdullah, very quickly, and I'm going to get all the rest of the panelists to weigh in on this also. Given that there are elections in India in 2019, do you see any movement before that? Or is that increasingly unlikely?
Well, let's be straight about one thing. Why can't the talks start, not as I said before, at the higher level? Why can't it be done on the side, which has the backing of the government of India, government of Pakistan? And when the new elections take place, new prime minister gets through, the thing will be somewhere at least there. Why waste 8 months?
Okay. Mani, any chance of discussion before the elections?
We are already prejudging that things will not work.
All right.
That this thing will never succeed.
I think nothing substantive can be expected before the next Lok Sabha election. But even after the Lok Sabha election, if we want substantive results, the dialogue has to be uninterrupted and uninterruptible.
All right. Can I on that note just bring in Shyam Saran, former foreign secretary, great expert, of course, on Pakistan and all that's happening. Mr. Shyam Saran, just wanted to ask you, get you another dialogue. Do you think there is an opening to Pakistan at the present moment?
Well, unless we make a try, we won't know whether it is an opening or not. So I think even though I know there is considerable amount of skepticism about what his election as prime minister may mean for our bilateral relations, but I soon see no reason why we should not explore whether there is a possibility of perhaps taking a more positive turn in our relationship.
Well, you know, one of the questions that we've been discussing is whether Imran Khan, given his history, given his links to the army, is more likely to deliver on some sort of peace than a Nawaz Sharif would have been.
Well, I'm not so sure about this aspect of being close to the non-state actors. The Taliban, that was certainly a phase in his political career when he did think that dialogue with the Taliban would be helpful. But as far as several of the India-centered groups are concerned, like the LET, I have not seen much evidence of there being any close relationship, with the Punjab-based groups. And secondly, it is also encouraging that the political party, which was floated by the LET, frankly came off very badly there during the elections. So perhaps there is a little room for us to take the relationship forward.
Okay, we've also been trying to discuss the China factor. We've heard China saying, we'd like to mediate or we'd like to help. But obviously, that's something which India is never going to even think about remotely. What is your sense of how China is going to play in this entire equation?
Well, the China factor has been, in fact, a rather negative factor, as in our relationship, whether it is in terms of, assisting Pakistan with its nuclear weapons program, being a very important defense partner for Pakistan. And now you have, of course, the CPEC, the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, which is a vehicle for a very large amount of investment by China. So Chinese stakes in Pakistan have increased. Now, having said that, perhaps, it may not be in China's interest to see an open conflict between India and Pakistan, because that could endanger the assets that China has built up in Pakistan. But I certainly do not see necessarily a positive role played by China in terms of India-Pakistan relationship. And frankly, at the end of the day, the Pakistan challenge is something that we have to handle on our own.
Okay, one last question. On the question of the army, do you think, given the economic slide that we are seeing in Pakistan, the narrowing space with all the statements coming from the United States and others, do you think the army feels it is in a bit of a corner right now? And if so, does it make it more or less likely that they would reciprocate any overtures that India makes?
Well, to some extent, it has been encouraging that Imran Khan has been talking about the importance of trade between India and Pakistan. And perhaps some of his advisors may be telling him that given the state of the Pakistani economy, it might be a good idea to expand trade with India, which can actually be a plus point for the Pakistani economy. But you are right, the Pakistani economy is in a rather difficult situation. And I do not know if they are going to approach the IMF for a fairly substantial support, whether that would be forthcoming given the attitude of the United States at this point of time. So clearly a very difficult economic situation. And yes, maybe that might lead to perhaps some rethink on the possibility of expanding economic relations with India.
Right, Mr. Shamsaran, thank you so much for joining us. We've really heard from all our experts on the various possibilities that are there on what should be done between India and Pakistan. Just enough time to get two or three quick comments from Aam Aadmi in a sense of, my God, lots of people have views in Pakistan. Can you just pass it to that lady there, then here, then two questions from there. Yeah.
Okay, so I would like to ask one question that's regarding the Navjot Singh Sidhu's visit in Pakistan. So when we're saying that whatever Prime Minister of Pakistan is saying that's happening at the helm of what army is doing. So when Prime Minister of Pakistan is backing Navjot Singh Sidhu, so how will you justify that Pakistan army doesn't want any good relationships? Because here he's backing Sidhu. So how will you justify that?
I mean, there's been a big row over Navjot Singh Sidhu and the hug out there. What do you
think? Yeah. I mean, this is a ridiculous thing. You know, I think it was very brave of Navjot Sidhu to have gone, considering the other two cricketers backed out. And I don't know why so much fuss is being made about this hug, because this is the natural thing for when two Punjabis meet.
You're hugging somebody who's murdered Indians.
No, please understand that he is a Bajwa also. And this fellow is a Sidhu. These are Jats, you know. They are brothers across the border. We have Bajwas on our side as well. Okay. So other than turning his face away, he had no other option.
Okay, let's get some other quick comments. Yeah.
So my question is, when you say that if we initiate...
Well, we just have comments now. No time for questions now. Just some comments if you have any. Yeah.
Okay, so my comment would be that initiating dialogue with Pakistan would not be the way to reduce terrorism, because either way, we cannot justify the terrorism, whether we initiate dialogue or not.
Okay, fair enough. Gentleman here. Yeah.
Yeah, what I want to say is that when a son irritates a father, father usually tries for twice, thrice, 10 times, then just ignores the son. Shouldn't India just start ignoring, given its economical, geographical, and diversity which it encompasses? Shouldn't it just ignore an Islamist state like Pakistan?
Pakistan okay. Treated like an errant child and ignored.
Pakistan okay. Doesn't consider India to be the father. Okay. That's the yeah. difficulty.
My comment is really for Mr. Manishankar Iyer. What was the best time in Indo-Pak relations, and what do we learn from that?
Okay, ma'am, I'm just going to take some more comments and then come back to that. Yeah, the gentleman there in the blazer. Yeah. Who's got the mic? Then we'll just pass this to you.
Sir, I just want to say that, as I saw in the panel, the BJP ruling government and the RSS both have same stance. And I surely see an attitude...
The BJP and the RSS normally do have the same stance. Why are you suddenly surprised?
And obviously, sir, we all know what's going back in the back room between both of them. So, sir, I
no
clearly see...
There's an
attitude problem with the BJP government that they just don't want to talk. Because, sir, dialogue should never stop, because we are not Pakistan. We want peace.
Okay, well, Modi would say that I did go to Pakistan, and that was followed by Pathankot. Okay.
And Uri as well.
Sir, why we have seen that the India-Pakistan relations have always been strenuous. Now, with the upcoming of globalization, we can bolster our trade ties, such as to create interdependencies between the two countries. Such
yeah,
that
Pakistan's
neither
willing to trade, right? If they're not willing to trade, how do you do that?
Yes, sir.
That's the problem. Okay, last comment. I'm flat out of time, I'm afraid.
Sir, when everybody wants peace from this side or that side, so why can't we take any initiative or entering into a mutual agreement so that we enter into a conclusion leading to peace?
It's not clear-cut that everybody wants peace.
We took many initiatives.
Okay.
But we're backstabbed.
Sorry, that is the last comment. I'm really over time. Yeah.
Okay. So considering the Indo-Pak relations at current, does that mean that when we say that we have to end the past, does that mean that we're paving way to the new beginnings?
But that's the obvious thing. If you have to at some point move on from the past, if you want to pave new beginnings. Look, lots to talk about. India-Pakistan, one of those really tricky questions. It's been a tricky question since both countries were born, a tricky question even before that. No clear-cut answers one way or the other are likely to emerge. But I guess if not with Pakistan, at least this process of debate and dialogue has to continue within our country to at least try and get some modus vivendi on to what the best way to do it is. Yes, we've got a troublesome neighbor, but you are stuck with that troublesome neighbor, so we've got to figure out how best to handle it. That's it for now. Thank you so much for watching. We'll be back next week.